If you're the police, where are your badges?
Badges? We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
He wins, he takes the car. I win, I take his finger. Is that so strange?
Leiningen, you're up against a monster 20 miles long and 2 miles wide, 40 square miles of agonizing death. You can't stop it.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Round up the usual suspects.
Silent Breed is people!
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Welcome to Paleo Cinema Podcast.
Paleo Cinema Podcast is a fortnightly podcast about movies. All kinds of movies. Crime movies, science fiction movies, horror movies, movies with cool actors you've never heard of in them, movies where CGI stands for criminals, girls and ice picks, classic movies, cult movies, and any other movie Terry wants to rant about as long as the movie is more than 20 years old. You can find the podcast website at paleo-cinema.com. The voicemail number is 206-350-5440. Or you can email or send MP3 voicemails to cultguru@gmail.com. That's cult with a K. This podcast usually contains swearing and is probably not safe for work unless you work in a brothel or a David Mamet film.
Hello and welcome to Paleo Cinema Podcast number 91. Yes, we're in the last 10 podcasts before the big 10 and the last sign of the apocalypse occurs. My name's Terry Frost, and this time around we're still on the A to Z project, and we have hit the letter M. And in this case, M stands for Mabusa, Dr. Mabusa. And I'm going to be talking about the Dr. Mabusa films, how they're the most political of crime movies, and basically going through the whole history of Dr. Mabusa from the 19-teens up until 1990. And probably into the 21st century, just a little bit as well. So, how is everybody? The weather here is becoming clement. Summer is a coming in, and it's a bit humid today. It's a little bit cloudy. But on the bright side of things, even brighter than that, the renovations have been done, all except for the kitchen splashbacks. But then that means right now the kitchen is functional. We can cook. We can eat out there. We have beautiful black granite bench tops that are the envy of the whole planet. And in general, things are settling back into the way they should be. And yes, we are settling into the Newton mass season again, which is great. And there will be another podcast, which I will be releasing on the planet just around the time that the reindeer shit hits everybody's roof. So I'm not sure whether that's going to be a music episode or a continuation of the 80s or what yet. I'm doing it in about a week's time. So get your feedback in early and that will help out what we're doing here. So what have I been watching? Let me have a look. I do have the Mizo already open, so I prepared ahead of time this time. Let me see. Apart from Boost, I did get Showgirls on Blu-ray. Now, the only excuse I've got for that is it was a two for $20 deal and I liked the other movie, but I didn't find anything else that I wanted. And I watched Showgirls, which is pretty atrocious, really. It does have nudity, but the nudity isn't erotic, which I find annoying, apart from anything else. Nobody acts like a real human being would. And basically, this is a remake of All About Eve with tits and ass in it, set in Las Vegas. And in that, of course, it's interesting in a really weird way, and it has some sex scenes that are risible. They just are very, very, very bad. The other things I've seen, It Happened Here, which is a 1965 movie. It's a little hard to find, but it's worth finding. It was done as a labour of love by a whole bunch of people over a year or two, and it's an alternate history of 1965 where the Nazis won. It was done on a minuscule budget, but you have things like trucks full of German soldiers around Whitehall and all sorts of things, and some very ugly urban scenes. And it's a very interesting little effort there. Not widely known, but it's all in very gritty black and white. But I do like the film a lot. It's one of those things where these people really wanted to make the film. They worked on it. They got their friends around. They begged, borrowed, and stole what they needed to tell a very effective story of an alternate universe where the Germans won. So all credit to the people who made that. Now, you've got to mention the radio. A couple of bits of good news. I have mentioned them on Facebook, but if you're not aware of it, the gig I do on ABC Local Radio in the Northern Territory is continuing next year. Ivor and I want to do it. The guy in charge of ABC Radio heard what we're doing and left this a fantastic piece of feedback with Ivor. He said that I'm a good broadcaster. That is mind-blowingly good news for me. I really have tried hard with the radio gig. I've done the research. I've re-put a lot of effort into it. I enjoy it very, very much. And so it's now being rewarded. So we're going to continue. The other bit of news is that Ivor is sending me copies of all of the radio gigs that we've done as MP3 files. And I do have permission to chuck them at the podcast audience. So what I'll be doing is including some of the radio stuff in future podcasts, probably at the end, because they don't sit well in the middle of what I'm doing for this. But I will add them as an addition to the end of the podcast. So the people who can't be up and about when it plays live and streams on the web from ABC Local Radio in the Northern Territory can now, with the blessing of the ABC, listen to Ivor and I waffle about movies for about half an hour. And you get to hear the beautiful intro they've got for me, which I'm very proud of, even though I don't like any of the movie soundtracks they referenced during the intro. But it's going very, very well. And I just love doing it. As I said before, I love the discipline of it. I love finding something new. And I love sharing that love of movies in an entirely new way. For me, I've said this before, so I do apologise. Being part, a very small part of the national broadcaster is an honour for me. I don't get very weird about stuff like that, but being able to contribute to the national broadcaster is something I never thought I'd do, and it's something, given my background as a very, very working class, self-educated guy, it's an amazing and interesting place for me to be right now, particularly this age. So, yeah, so I will be including that. As soon as I get them, I may pop one or two up back-to-back as standalone, not in the counting as an episode, but I may just chuck a couple up there for people to download and then in future include them on the arse end of the podcast. Fair warning, though, I do talk about some movies I have spoken about on the podcast, but I also speak about movies that I haven't spoken about on the podcast, which is a bit of fun as well. I'll just let you know the last two I did because they were a bit of fun. I did Passport to Pimlico, the Ealing film starring Stanley Holloway and Hermione Baddeley and other people like that. So we had a chat about that, which was a lot of fun. And for the end of the year one, which is the one I just recorded, which is being broadcast on Thursday next week, I'll give you a date on that Thursday. It'll be Wednesday for Americans and other people who are temporarily retarded. Let me just bring that up on my screen, and the computer goes slow. Yep, so that's going to be on it'll be Thursday the 15th, which will be Wednesday the 14th in America. So that's the last one of the year, and Ivor and I just kind of grooved away, and he thanked me for the year's efforts, and we're coming back next year, and it's great. Love it, love it, love it. So the other thing we did, I didn't mention what we did in the most recent one. We did In Like Flint and Our Man Flint. We kind of went to the shallow end of the pool and talked about how groovy James Coburn was and waffled away, as we do, about that. And I put together a montage of the Flint films, which I'm going to play for you now. I'm going to grab the audio and just play that while I take a break, just to show you the kind of stuff I'm experimenting with on radio.
I repeat after me. I am not a pleasure unit. I am not a pleasure unit.
I am not a pleasure unit. I am not a pleasure unit.
Say, what does that eagle attack mean?
He's been trained to recognize and attack Americans.
Anti-American eagle. It's diabolical. Lower your hand slowly and smile.
What?
If he senses hostility towards me, he'll rip you apart now.
Breakfast, sir. I had lunch 2 hours ago.
Oh, I must still be on Moscow time.
Moscow? What? Business?
No, the ballet, sir.
You traveled all the way to Moscow to watch a ballet?
No, to teach. But sir, throughout the world of the preparation of bouillabaisse, the usual proportion of garlic to buttered saffron fennel is 2 cloves of garlic to a pinch of buttered saffron to a dash of fennel. Now, only in a certain small section of Marseille are these 3 condiments prepared in these proportions. Whoever handled that dart was in Marseille within the last 24 hours.
Be frozen in nitrogen gas and then thawed out at some time later, like a supermarket pizza is not exactly the classical idea of immortality.
I noticed that these men were wearing Battle of the Bulge ribbons.
There is no ribbon for the Battle of the Bulge.
Exactly. These men are imposters.
What, Gridley? This man's been with us? That's Gridley!
Sir, if you look around the eyes, you'll see some scars. On the bridge of the nose, plastic surgery.
You really are good at it, Mr. Flint. Tell me something. What is it about you that makes you so irresistible to women?
It's very simple. I don't compete with them.
That was a little experiment I did for the radio. And as you can hear outside, it is raining now and there is thunder about. So I'm going to take another little tiny bit of a break. I'll play some music and I'll come back when hopefully the rain isn't teeming in the background as I speak.
New York on Sunday, big city, taking a nap. Slow down, it's Sunday, life's a ball, let it fall in your lap. If you got trouble, just take them out for a walk. They'll burst like bubbles in the fun of a Sunday in New York. You can spend time without spending a dime, watching people watch people pass. Later you're pausing in one of those stores, there's that face next to yours in the glass. 2 hearts stop beating, you're both too breathless to speak. Love smiles a greeting, then the dream that has seen you through the week comes true on Sunday in New York. New York on Sunday, big city taking a nap. Slow down, it's Sunday, life's a ball, let it fall in your lap. And if you've got trouble, go take them out for a walk. They'll burst like bubbles in the fun of a Sunday in New York. You can spend time without spending a dime, watching people watch people pass. Later you're pausing in one of those stores, there's that face next to yours in the glass. 2 hearts stop beating, you're both too breathless to speak. Love smiles a greeting, then the dream that has seen you through the week on Sunday in New York. Comes true on Sunday in New York.
That was Bobby Darin with Sunday in New York from the movie of the same name, which starred Australia's own Rod Taylor, and a very young, very sexy Jane Fonda. Okay, let's get on to Dr. Mabuza. I'm just getting my paperwork ready here. People think that Fritz Lang invented Dr. Mabuza, but that's not the case. It was actually invented by a French pulp fiction writer called Norbert Jacques, who wrote novels about Dr. Mabuza just around the very, very early part of the 20th century. He deliberately wrote them kind of imitating previous anti-heroes or criminal masterminds in fiction, like Fantomas and the Vampires and all those other ones that were around at the beginning of the century. And he deliberately did this in order to sell it to a film studio. He was in Germany, and he wrote in German. And a guy called Fritz Lang, a young filmmaker at the time, decided that he was going to make a movie called Dr. Mabuse the Spieler, which is kind of loosely translates, people translate it as Dr. Mabuse the Gambler, but it's actually Dr. Mabuse the Grabber. Dr. Mabuza in this first iteration, and Dr. Mabuza does change a lot during the history of him in film. I'll read it from Wikipedia just to give you a bit of an idea, because it's a bit hard to get tabs on exactly who and what Dr. Mabuza is. It says here, Dr. Mabuza is a criminal mastermind, a doctor of psychology, and a master of disguise, armed with the powers of hypnosis and mind control, who oversees the counterfeiting and gambling rackets in the Berlin underworld. He visits gambling dens by night in various guises and aliases, using the power of suggestion to win cards and finance his plans. So basically, that's... Well, I've got to give you a historic context in this. This is where Fritz Lang was coming from when he made the first Dr. Mabuza thriller. Germany had lost the First World War, and they had the hyperinflation. Money was worth nothing. Morals went out the window. Society was crumbling, which left it such a fertile field for Nazis when they came along in the 1930s. But there were people who profiteered from this deliberately. They didn't do it to rebuild their country. They did it to become rich. And the reason why Fritz Lang took on Dr. Mabuza and adapted it to his own purposes was he wanted to do a commentary on these kind of assholes who were manipulating currencies and manipulating the finances, and not that anything like that could ever possibly happen in the 21st century, but he really wanted to have a go at these bastards and really nail them down. Now, the first actor to play Mabuza was Rudolf Kleiner Rogge, who was a fairly well-known stage actor before he became a film actor. He played a criminal in The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari in 1919, and he went on to appear in other movies by Lang, including Destiny, Dr. Mabuse the Gambler, of course, Den Nibelungen, Metropolis, and Spies, called Spione or something like that. I've got a copy of Spies, and it's a really nice predecessor to James Bond type films. A lot of good action scenes in there for a silent film of the time. Dr. Mabuza the Spieler was a really popular film. And, of course, during the 1920s, Lang went on to do other films, as I mentioned just before. But he came back to Dr. Mabuza in 1933 with Das Testament to Dr. Mabuza, The Testament of Dr. Mabuza, which was done in a couple of different versions. And it's a movie that's gone through a lot of changes over the years. At the same time they were doing the German version, they were doing a French version in French language, because at the time, before dubbing became popular and really easier to do, they'd make different versions of it. And they made a German and a French version. Now, I've seen a comparison of the German and French versions of The Testament of Dr. Mabuza. And the French ones, the actors aren't anywhere near as good, and they play it a lot more broadly, and it's just not done quite as well, even though Fritz Lang himself directed both versions, because he was fluent in both of the languages. Now, getting on to The Testament of Dr. Mabuza pretty quickly, because I haven't seen Dr. Mabuza the Spieler. I did try to find a copy of it for the podcast, but I just couldn't get my hands on one quick enough. You know how it goes with these things. And Testament Dr. Mabuza, I found a really interesting film. It has a really nice action scene at the start where a criminal's hiding from a couple of other criminals and escapes, but ultimately gets blown up by a 44-gallon drum full of explosives. But it's a nice, tense little bit with the machinery from the factory he's hiding in the background kind of repetitively clunking away and just building the tension really, really nicely. Now, the testament of Dr. Mabuza wasn't his wife at the time, Theo von Harbour, paid Jacques not to write a novel so that it wouldn't conflict with what they wanted to do with the testament of Dr. Mabuza. And more than anything else, the testament of Dr. Mabuza is a critique and a criticism of the thuggish methods of the Nazis at the time. Now, I'll see if I can find a little bit of a plot premise for this one, because it is a pretty cool little film. Okay, I'll go with the one that sits in IMDb. It's not that good. A Berlin police inspector, Lohmann, investigates a case in which all clues lead to a man who's in a hospital for mental illnesses for so many years, Dr. Mabuza. So that's very broadly what it's about. And Mabuza in this one really is increasingly a kind of... He's been called a philosophical Superman. He basically wants to destroy the world, and if he can't destroy the world, he definitely wants to control as much of it as he can. He'll manipulate people directly by, you know, he'll get criminals to do some things for him. He'll blackmail people into committing crimes for him. He'll unwittingly trick people into performing acts which benefit Mabuza and his aims, really, you know, In a subtle way. He's an incredibly intelligent, incredibly ruthless man who can control people's minds. And as the series evolves, he's almost kind of telepathic mind control, manipulates people in nasty ways. There is a possibility. Inspector Lohmann appears in a number of the films. In some of the films, he's played by Gert Fröber, the guy who played Goldfinger in Goldfinger, German actor, really interesting guy. But there's another possibility here that I'm just looking at in IMDb. They said that Willy Lohmann from Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman was named for criminal commissioner, was it criminal commissar Lohmann from the testament of Dr. Mabuza. So it's influenced Arthur Miller, amongst other things. The film was banned by the Nazis, being the kind of people they are. Goebbels himself banned it for its subversive nature and the possibility that it might incite people to antisocial behaviour and terrorism against the state. Now, having said that, the French version became very popular, even though it was a lesser version, and the German version kind of faded from view. In the 1950s, the Americans got hold of a print of it, which they released as The Crimes of Dr. Mabuza, which was a dub version, and it was a shorter cut. And the dubbing kind of did change things around a little bit and not stay true to Fritz Lang's original ideas about it. Of course, Lang was still alive in 1955 when the American version came out, but he didn't particularly care about what America did with it. He kind of just wanted his movie to be out there and never really made a public statement regarding the dub version. Now, Lang himself did come back to Dr. Mabuza 27 years after The Testament. But before I get into that, what I might do is take a little bit of a break and play this little kind of montage thing. So I'm into montages with audio at the moment. I'll play this little montage I put together of Dr. Mabuza. Of course, it's in German, so I couldn't really give you dialogue with any meaning unless you speak German, which I, for one, don't. But I just put together a little short montage of stuff about Dr. Mabuza.
Dr. Mabuza. But who is Dr. Mabuza?
Mabuza. Dr. Mabuza.
Dr. Mabuza.
Dr. Mabuza. But who is Dr. Mabuza?
Mabuza. Dr. Mabuza.
Dr. Mabuza.
Dr. Mabuza. But who is Dr. Mabuza?
Mabuza. Dr. Mabuza.
Dr. Mabuza.
That's just me fucking around with the audio. I love the way they go, Dr. Mabuza. in the films. But anyway, getting back to Fritz Lang. In 1960, 27 years after The Testament of Dr. Mabuse, a third Mabuse film came out made by our old friend Fritz Lang. It was actually the last film he directed as a director of cinema. And that one was The Tausend Augen des Dr. Mabuse, or A Thousand Eyes of Dr. Mabuse, which has got some people actually knowing. It's got Peter Van Eyck, a German actor that played Nazis for a lot of his career in English-speaking films. Dawn Adams, an English actress, who people remember played a slightly older woman in The Vampire Lovers, the Hammer horror film. And as Inspector Lohmann, he's playing Inspector Crass. He played Inspector Lohmann later on, but he played Inspector Crass in this one. Is their old mate Gerd Frober. And the interesting thing is the Inspector, Inspector Crass and Inspector Lohmann are pretty much the same guys, the same character. They're usually fat in The Testament of Dr. Mabuse is played by a fat actor, and he's a kind of cheerful, avuncular kind of guy, a police inspector, very good at his job and very smart, but not a slender kind of person. And getting Gerd Frober to play him in this film and in a couple of other films that were made after this was really good. He is interesting. In Goldfinger, you see him, but you don't really see him at his best. And in the Mabuse films that I've got, Frober is interesting. I mean, he's got a very penetrating glance. He's got this thing of doing sidelong glances, even though he's playing a character that could be seen at first appearance to be a slight buffoon. Very canny kind of actor, and he plays the thing very well. Now, Gerd Frober was an interesting guy. When there was the PR junket for Goldfinger, people said to him, "Were you a Nazi?" Because, you know, obviously he's a guy in his 50s at the time, and this is 20 years after the war, so obviously he would have been involved in some way. And he just said, "Yes, of course, we were all Nazis." Now, that got him some bad press, and of course the people at Eon Films who made the James Bond films were a bit pissed off with Gerd Frober for that. But at the time, in Israel, a couple came forward and said, "Don't diss Gerd Frober. He saved us from the Nazis. He hid us from the Nazis." So even though he was technically a member of the Nazi party, two Jews came forward voluntarily with nobody actually giving them any prompting and gave the true history of Gerd Frober during the war, that he had rescued people from the Nazis. So again, this goes back to the thing of nobody is just one thing. Everybody's a bit more complicated than we give them credit for. And even though Frober did kind of drink the Kool-Aid to a certain extent, he also did something right during that period of time. So I always found him very memorable because of that. Now, The Thousand Eyes of Dr. Mabuse is a very cool and groovy movie. It's got some interesting actors in it too. Apart from that, Werner Peters is in it. He is a kind of shorter, fatter guy. You'll know the face because he's played Nazis anyway. Howard Vernon, another person known from European horror films at the time, is in the film as well. And as our old mate Mabuse, Wolfgang Preiss, another German actor at the time, and he's very good at Mabuse. I'll give you a bit of a Preissy on The Thousand Eyes of Dr. Mabuse, because this is the one I kind of like of the later ones. A reporter is killed in his car on the way to work. Inspector Crass gets a call from his informant, Peter Cornelius, a blind fortune teller, who has a vision of the crime, but not the perpetrator. Meanwhile, Henry Travers, a rich American industrialist, checks into the Luxor Hotel, which has been outfitted by the Nazis during World War II to spy on people in every room. He becomes involved with Marion Menil. She was played by Dawn Adams, and Henry Travers was played by Peter Van Eyck, who is being threatened by her evil club-footed husband, Hieronymus B. Misselzweig, purportedly a salesman who was also a guest in the hotel and always seems to be lurking about. These disparate characters eventually get together to solve what appears to be the re-emergence of the long-dead Dr. Mabuse. Now, this one's, as I said, is the last of the Fritz Lang Mabuse films. And it's not a bad little thriller. It's very much based on Rialto, a genre of films that a studio called Rialto Films started a couple of years before this film. Krimi films, they were called. They were based on the novels of a guy called Edgar Wallace, who lived from 1875 till 1932. He was a writer of thrillers, and for some reason the Germans loved Edgar Wallace thrillers. They loved it like Australians love Vegemite. And so between about 59 and about 70, there are all of these thriller movies, mostly set in England, even though they're in German and filmed in Germany, based on the novels of Edgar Wallace, and they were called crimi films. From The Thousand Eyes of Dr. Mabuse onwards, the Mabuse films, with one exception in 1990, were basically crimi films, and that works really well. Having, rather than the masked killer that they had in the Edgar Wallace movies, they had Mabuse substituting for that. It was filmed very much in the same way, black and white, gritty, filmed on the streets of Germany, mystery, weird weapons. In fact, in one of Mabuse's henchmen, played by Howard Vernon in this movie, has a gun that shoots iridium steel darts into people's brains from a distance, silently. And that's one of the main murder weapons. And then you've got the grotesque husband of the Dawn Adams character, who's a really grotesque rapist brute with a club foot. You've got the Peter Van Eyck character kind of playing what is ostensibly a suave playboy but comes across pretty creepy. And then you've got Gert Frobe and his coppers trying to find out what's going on and trying to find Mabuse, which they do. And in the end, Mabuse dies. But here's the thing about Dr. Mabuse. As the films evolved from this point onwards, the mythology of Mabuse changed. Mabuse became, if a Mabuse died, the spirit and the soul of Dr. Mabuse would move into somebody else, and Dr. Mabuse would continue. It's almost like he's an idea that has to be perpetuated and moves on. So that brings us to the three movies in the Dr. Mabuse collection, which I recommend you get on DVD. Amazon, I got it dead cheap. Now, these films were made by a company called CCC in Germany in the early 1960s. And they are pretty damn cool. I do like them. The first one is 1961, just after The Thousand Eyes of Dr. Mabuse. It's called The Return of Dr. Mabuse, and it has Gert Frobe again as Lohmann. Lex Barker, an American actor who people might remember was briefly Tarzan. Dahlia Lavi, who was one of the great spy chicks of the 1960s, an Israeli actress who was also in 2 Weeks in Another Town about a year after this, which Zom and I talked about on a previous podcast. And Wolfgang Preis again, playing Dr. Mabuse. Now, I'll read you the blurb from the back of the DVD cover for this one. It's a flipper DVD set, so two movies are on one side of the disc and one movie's on the other. The most fiendish criminal mastermind of all time plans an alliance with the Chicago crime syndicate. A series of crimes and killings sets Inspector Lohmann, Gert Frobe, and FBI agent Joe Como, Lex Barker, on a trail of danger where not everybody is who they appear to be. Lohmann and Como have foiled the plans of the diabolical Dr. Mabuse, a man believed to be long dead. So that's it, basically. And there are weird things where Dahlia Lavi and Lex Barker get trapped in a room which is slowly filling with water, and they've got to use a gas line explosion to escape from it. And it's a good little thriller, and it runs along nicely. And Gert Frobe has a lot of fun playing Lohmann in this one. At the start of the movie, he's about to go off for a fishing week on holidays and that, and is trying to decide how many cases of lager he wants to take with him. And he's a real fun character in that one. The second one gets into kind of Phantom of the Opera territory, and that is The Invisible Dr. Mabuse, which again has Lex Barker playing Joe Como. Karen Dorr, who you might remember was the chick who got eaten by the piranhas in You Only Live Twice. Very attractive actress, German actress. She was married to the director of the first two of these CCC Dr. Mabuse films, a guy called Harold Reinl, who had a long career in Germany making kind of genre films. He did this weird series of German westerns called Winnetou, which was based on some novels by a writer called Carl May. And they're kind of really weird westerns where all the characters are German. And Lex Barker's in them as well, playing a character called Old Shatterhand. And they're really freaky. If you think spaghetti westerns are freaky, you should check out the Winnetou movies that Harold Reinl and Lex Barker did in the 1960s. They are really fucking off the planet. And worth catching up for that very reason. But I'm digressing a bit. But in this one, I'll read you the blurb on this one because I like this one a lot. A lot of it's set in the theatre. And again, it's got Werner Peters in it. There's not a Dr. Mabuse film from 1960 to 1965 that doesn't have Werner Peters in it playing different characters. In one, he's playing a good guy cop, and another one, he's playing an evil clown. They, like a lot of the crimi films, the same actors appear in them. Klaus Kinski was one. They all appear in these crimi films, they're playing different characters each time. It is very, very weird, and it's hard to keep up. But anyway, the second one, The Invisible Dr. Mabuse, the second one of the CCC movies, I'll read you the blurb from that one. A beautiful dancer is terrorized by an invisible man. FBI agent Joe Comer, Lex Barker, is out to get the killer of a fellow agent. At the heart of the mystery is Operation X, an invention which could give an almost unlimited power to whoever possesses it. Is Dr. Mabuse behind the danger, or is it the invisible being who has brought terror into the lives of Leon the dancer? A mixture of mystery, intrigue, and a dash of Phantom of the Opera in this thriller. And it is quite cool too. I love that, like a lot of films, because it's set in a somewhat different culture than our own, it's interesting to see how they approach the material. And even things like street scenes and advertising things and the way a nightclub is set up in a movie, or the way the set design is done, or the way the lighting's done, what people wear, what people do, what a cafe has in it. They're really interesting from all of those different viewpoints to see how essentially the same material, and you could consider this stuff the same material as, for instance, a film noir. But the approach taken is very different. And I do like that. I think that's one of the joys of cinema is the fact that things can look different depending on where they come from. And these Mabuse crimi films are very much like that. Now, the third of the three in the Dr. Mabuse collection is the Death Ray Mirror of Dr. Mabuse, which has actually got a space weapon in it where you can bounce a laser beam off something in space and destroy anything in the world. This one's got Peter Van Eyck, Yvonne Furneaux, who people remember from Fellini's La Dolce Vita and a number of other films in the 1960s. English actor Leo Genn is in it, and this one, the demon of crime is back, reaching out to steal a new device, a death ray weapon that would enable Dr. Mabuse to wreak new havoc upon the world. British agent Floyd Anders is sent to the Isle of Malta to protect the weapons inventor Professor Larson. But even as the diabolical mastermind prepares to strike, agent Floyd Anders must race against time to learn who among the various suspects is really the power-mad Dr. Mabuse. So that's it. Basically, these films are good, honest adventure flicks. They're the kind of things that I saw. I actually saw some of the Edgar Wallace-style films on Saturday matinees when I was a kid. The Trigon Factor with Stuart Granger, for instance, was one of these films. So I'm kind of pre-programmed to like them. And I do. They a weirdness about them, a strangeness about them, and an enthusiasm for the material, which I kind of like. Weird weapons and explosions and unexplained, mysterious and unusually elaborate and unnecessarily elaborate deaths are involved. You have police investigators who are always a bit idiosyncratic. You have beautiful women in peril, which is always a nice thing. And really, they are a joy, and I kind of really like the concept of Dr. Mabuse, a master criminal who, when he dies, his spirit goes somewhere else and does something else. Now, I've been having a bit of a discussion about Dr. Mabuse on Facebook, and there's been a bit of an argument between me and my mate Balrog about whether George Soros is Dr. Mabuse. There are arguments either way. I mean, if we're going back to it, I mean, my argument is Rupert Murdoch is Dr. Mabuse, because Rupert Murdoch, like Dr. Mabuse, started out in a provincial city. In Mabuse's case, it was Munich. In Rupert Murdoch's case, it was Adelaide here in Australia. They both relate weak-minded people using scientific weapons. In Mabuse's case, it's mind control. In Rupert Murdoch's case, it's Fox News. And there are some of the movies where Mabuse is not physically dissimilar to Rupert. So my theory, and I'm going to run with this because I like it, is that Rupert Murdoch is Dr. Mabuse in his latest incarnation. And this actually fits too, because Adelaide, of all the cities in Australia, has the highest German population. Before the wars, a whole bunch of Germans came over to grow wine grapes and produce small goods and things like that, and they settled in towns like Harndorf around Adelaide and in the Barossa Valley. So it actually fits with my theory beautifully well. And I'm going to have to add that to the Facebook thing, that Rupert started in Adelaide and Adelaide's full of Germans and Dr. Mabuse is German. So that's it for the CCC Mabuse collection. Get it. It's a bit of fun. It takes a little while to get your head around a crimi film because they've got a very different approach to the crime genre. And I'm not sure I'm ever going to get my head around German westerns. And it is a limitation, I admit. It does leave me at a disadvantage over certain other people. But, yeah, German westerns are just a bit too weird for my tastes. I'm going to give them another go, but in the meantime, I'm going to kind of dip into crimi movies more and see what I can come up with. Now, there is a last Mabuse film from 1990, but I'm going to take another break now, and I'll come back and I'll do a bit of a talk about that one, because that one is rather interesting.
While the global media is focusing on the aftermath of the global financial crisis, debating on whether global warming is scientifically sound or merely a political stunt, or reporting on citizens around the world toppling cruel dictatorships, I want to know why they're not focusing on the big issues. Is chess a better label than Sun? Did Richard Thompson or Britney Spears do a better version of Whoops, I Did It Again? Is Lou Reed or Van Morrison a grumpier old man? Do you think you two are a crap band? Do these issues matter in your life? They matter in mine. That's why I host Love That Album, a podcast based around music minutia.
Join me, Morris Pushtinsky, as every fortnight, myself and a guest host will dissect a favourite album right down to its bare bones and discuss some of the latest music news. You can find the podcast either on the blog site lovethatalbum.blogspot.com or at lovethatalbum.podbean, that's podbean.com, or just type in Love That Album, or one word, into iTunes. If your heart pumps to the beat of a Keith Moon drum fill, then I'd recommend you see a cardiologist. Failing that, you probably care about music passionately, in which case, join me for Love That Album. And you won't even have to drive your car into a swimming pool.
As I said, there's the 1990 Dr. Mabuse film, but there's also a version slightly earlier than that, done by our old mate Jess Franco. A movie called Dr. M. Schlagt Zu in 1972, which I don't have too much information about. I can probably find a copy of it, but Jess Franco films leave me a little bit cold. Now, there were a couple of other... I'm kind of missing out on some here, because Dr. Mabuse, I keep diving in and finding new things out about him. He's a mysterious fucker, but he is a mysterious Dr. Mabuse. There's Scotland Yard versus Dr. Mabuse in 1963, in which the spirit of Dr. Mabuse takes over the body of a famous professor. The professor and Dr. Mabuse then begins a new crime wave that terrorizes a city. Haven't had time to watch that one yet, but it's got Klaus Kinski in it, which is always a good thing. And again, it's got, I believe it's got Peter Van Eyck in it as well. I do have a copy of it, but I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. And it was actually written by the son of Edgar Wallace, Brian Edgar Wallace, which makes it more interesting, and directed by Paul May, who directed any number of genre films in Germany at the time. And yeah, I'm kind of, Werner Peters is in it again, Klaus Kinski again, Peter Van Eyck's in it, Wolfgang Preiss is in it. I'm going to have to really spend some time getting to know Dr. Mabuza better. Sorry if I'm a little bit vague on this at the moment, because it's really a fascinating area of cinema. It's a little hard to get the information. But let me see. And there's a, so I've got something else here which is interesting too. There's a film from 1984 called Dorian Gray im Spiegel der Boulevardpresse, which has the actress model Verushka in it, playing Dorian Gray. And Dr. Mabuse in that one is played by Delphine Seyrig, a European actress at the time. Got nothing. Dorian Gray becomes a tool of an international conspiracy. The plot is pretty wild, and there's no point to try to explain it because it's a second user review on IMDb. It's mainly about photography, set designs, and costumes. The film is basically eye candy. It sits through the whole thing. Great visuals. Some scenes drag a bit. Imagine John Waters and Matthew Barney, whoever Matthew Barney is, collaborating on a James Bond film. There's no consistent aesthetic here, just kind of random. Something good for when you're in a strange mood and don't feel like seeing something predictable. And that's the only review on that film, but it does have Dr. Mabuse in it as a female. But I suppose if Dr. Mabuse can transfer between bodies, why indeed not a woman's body? But getting back to the 1991, because I am dithering here and I do apologise. There's a movie which has two names. It's a Claude Chabrol movie from 1990. It's called Dr. M, but it's also known as Club Extinction. Now, I haven't watched this one for a while, but I'm going to dip into it again. Alan Bates plays Dr. M, who is also Dr. Mabuse. And it's Claude Chabrol's homage to Dr. Mabuse. And here's the plot line. It really is interesting and it's worth watching. In the not-too-distant future, Berlin is shocked by a series of spectacular suicides. A policeman's investigation leads him to a beautiful and enigmatic woman and the revelation of a sinister plot to manipulate the population through mass hypnosis. So that's really it. It's worth seeing. It's got some really spectacular deaths in it. Chabrol makes two in-joke references to the original Mabuse movie, in which there is a remake. There's a trucker called Rudy Kleiner Roger in it, and a policeman who tells somebody the Lang, after Fritz Lang. So, again, the more you dive into something like a character like Dr. Mabuse, the more different little trails will take you off into different genres of film and different things to look at. And you go, okay, I like that actor in the Mabuse films. What else has he been in? Movie research is like going through a library which has endless corridors going off into weird places you never knew existed. And this is a little bit like that. I kind of got intrigued by Dr. Mabuse. The thing that triggered it off this time is I just finished reading Kim Newman's latest book, Moriarty, The Hound of the D'Urbervilles, where towards the end in the last story in the movie, and basically it's a Sherlock Holmes novel, only Professor Moriarty and Sebastian Moran, his henchman, are in Plin Watson. And at the end, there's a young man who Moriarty meets when the whole bunch of different criminal conspirators get together. And the young man's name is Mabuse. So that kind of triggered this for me. And we're coming up on the M part of the A to Z project anyway. And I thought I'd give Dr. Mabuse a go. I don't know how well I've done with this. The whole aim of it is basically to say, check out these films. You might find them interesting. You might find them shit. But I'm starting to find them increasingly interesting. It does take my head a little bit to get my head around them because sometimes the subtitles aren't that great. Sometimes the dubbing on these films isn't that great. And you've got that barrier of language between you and knowing the movie as well as somebody who natively speaks the language in which the movie is made. But I do like movies with mysterious characters in them. I like the Fantomas movies, the early ones in the early part of the 20th century, and even the spoofy looking ones from the 1960s, which really play up the comedy aspects of Fantomas, but are still kind of groovy as well. So dipping into the pop culture of other cultures is a little bit of fun. You've got to really hack away at it rather than just let it flow over you the way you would if you were suddenly, say, watching the Venture Brothers for the first time and getting into that pop culture world. But that's about it I've got for Mabusa. Interesting stuff. It started out very, very political, like I said, and then drifted into a whole different genre with the crimi films, and then into science fiction with Dr. M from 1990. So he's a very versatile character, is Mabusa. And not as well known as I think he should be, because I think that there's a possibility of somebody making a 21st century Mabusa movie, if it's done right, staying true to the spirit of all the films that have gone before, from 1922 until now. So let's see, 1922, a 90-year film history of Dr. Mabuse would be a very cool thing to have if we had something at this end of things. As I said, the most recent real Mabuse film was in 1990, the Claude Chabrol one, which means that even at that stage there was a 70-year film history of Mabuse. But I'd like to see it done again, because interesting concept and the most philosophical of villains, really. And you can say things about financial crisis and the 1% and other things like that using a character like this. It'd be a really useful tool for satirizing, criticizing, and analyzing the changes to society that are just starting to happen now. Anyway, I'm going to take another break now, and I'll get back with a couple of bits of feedback we've got this time.
Thank you.
That was a track called Abigail by Piero Piccioni from the Beat at Cinecittà Volume 2 CD collection. And I recommend the Beat at Cinecittà soundtracks. They're all kind of pop music from 1960s Italian films. And it has a certain level of grooviness about it. So on with the feedback again. And we have a voicemail and an email. Now, I'm going to get into the email right now. By the way, the weather has stopped raining, and it did rain quite heavily out here at the moment. And it's stopped now, and it's still looking a little bit grey and manky outside. But I'll put up with it in the meantime. Okay, the email we got was from Monty, our old friend. He's been a friend of the podcast for a long time. Just a really quick comment he left. Oyster Terry and Sally, happy holidays. Thanks to Paleo Cinema Podcast. And that's it. That's basically it. But thanks, Monty. Appreciate that. I always like to share the love with people. And you've been a supporter of the podcast from when it's been around, which is terrific. Now, I've also got a little bit of a voicemail. It starts out musically and it ends on the usual high note.
Bum, bum, bum. Bip, 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 bip. There it is. Couldn't find my mute button on my TV. I couldn't find my mute button on my television. I'm just sitting here leaving feedback to you. I couldn't find my mute button on my television, but I found it now. I'm gonna leave feedback to you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Zom. Paleo Cinema, I answer the beckon call from the frost giant in the mountains of Valhalla, a home is a work in progress, but still a home. I don't know what that means. Anyway, Paleo Frost Cinema, Terry, Giant, this is Dr. Zom. I'm sitting here with the two mutts, one eating some food, the other one annoying me for attention because she is
a big ham.
Paleo Cinema, I'm sitting here right now, and I'm wondering to myself, thus, anytime I wonder to myself, I send the wonder to Paleo Cinema. A title, a movie, an aberration, if you will. A movie called Marty, starring Ernest Borgnine. In the titular role as Marty. This movie, it's a small movie, Burt Lancaster, or shall I say, Burt Lancaster, was involved in producing this movie and getting it up and made. Borgnine, not the leading man, if you will, if you know what I mean. what? This is one of my favorite movies, just for the simple fact that it was some filmmakers taking a chance. Nice little story about, an average everyday Joe. Interesting in the fact that Borgnine was chosen to play this role and actually won an Oscar for the role. But that movie aside, I was wondering if there are any other movies that say
starred a kind of a Hollywood mainstay, but only as a character actor, that was thrust into the forefront in a starring role in a movie that you can, you know, think of that you really liked. I can think of, off the top of my head, was it Robert Farnsworth in The Grey Fox? Got a lot of critical acclaim in the Canadian movie about an ex, outlaw from the Old West who gets out of prison into modern society as a senior citizen. But I'm just trying to think of any other ones, and I would like your help and see if you can come up with any that are very notable, that got critical acclaim of a, a character actor, or, let's not leave out the ladies, actress who was thrust into the forefront of a major motion picture that won critical acclaim or even some awards. This is Dr. Zom in a long-winded mode, chomping on some salsa while the dogs chomp on kibble, saying, freedom is a word I rarely use without thinking. Without thinking. This is Dr. Zom saying Zom.
And in case anyone's wondering, I didn't put any echo in Dr. Zom's voice there. That's how his voice naturally is. So, yeah, people, actors who really didn't get their go until late and with an interesting character role. There's only one that really comes to mind, and possibly because it's getting late in the afternoon, I'm a bit tired, but Gina Rowlands in Gloria, the original version, not the one with Sharon Stone, the one directed by Cassavetes, her husband at the time. Really a good character role. Slightly older actor, good solid character role, good crime movie, good action movie, good character piece. Got to see it if you haven't. I do like it a lot. I do like the fact that they filmed a lot of it on location, and Gina Rowlands just kicks ass in that film. And that's probably the one. Things like that, and maybe Jackie Brown. Looking at women's roles that do that sort of thing compared to Marty. I've actually got to go and revisit Marty. I haven't seen it in about 15 years. And I do like Ernie Borgnine. I love the fact that he's still acting. He's well into his 90s. I first saw him, of course, in things like McHale's Navy, and then later on realised he was a character actor and had some chops and wasn't just a gap-toothed guy who chuckled while he was wearing a sailor's hat. But, those kind of things, they really are interesting. There are times when you get actors who have got a long career and have built up an immense reservoir of talent and technique, and then suddenly the right role comes along and bam, they are immeasurably good in them. And I think they're the two that really kind of come to mind for me. And I haven't seen The Silver Fox with Richard Farnsworth in it. I saw him in a couple of other things. He was actually in The Two Jakes, which is the sequel to Chinatown that Nicholson directed, that I've got a lot of fondness for, even though most people dismiss it. But thanks again, Zom, and I hope the dogs don't give you too much shit, and I hope you can find the remote control in future. And as always, I do value your friendship, mate. So that's about it anyway for Paleo Cinema number 91. As I said, I'm recording one a little bit early next time, so if you are planning on leaving feedback, if you can do it before next weekend, which would be, he said, looking this up because calendars are not my friend at times, but basically a week after this is released and appears everywhere in Facebook. So, you know, the weekend of the 17th and 18th, if you get the feedback in by then, I'll put it into the podcast. Send Christmas wishes to whoever you want to. Send voicemails through. Anything you want to do just to kind of say hi would be great. Now that I don't have the radio to do until mid-January, I will be catching up on feedback to other podcasts. So, all the usual podcasts, GGTMC, Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, Love That Album, B-Movie Cast, Hammockus Podcast, Silver and Gold, of course, with Zom and Alex. All of those podcasts you hear about. And the other thing, too, is go to the Paleo Cinema Cafe on Facebook. And I usually chuck a few things up there and I foreshadow what I'm going to be doing next. And Zom throws weird bits of video and pictures in there. And, yeah, so let's get this thing interactive. And we've got social media to play with, talking about films. Put your feedback there if you like. I'll cut and paste it into where I usually keep it. But anyway, take care of yourselves. Be safe during the holidays. I know some people on the stupid part of the planet have decided that Christmas should be in winter for some odd reason, and it can get a little bit brutal with that. So take care of yourselves. If you're down this end of the planet, be careful with bushfires and storms. And I'll be back just around the time that reindeer shit does hit the roof, and with another podcast. So that's about it. I'll leave you with some music. I'll pick something random, and take care.